Welcome to Late Space. We are basically trying to provide the best optimal sort of podcast experience of NeurIPS for people who are not here. And congrats on your paper. How's it feel?
Yeah, it was very exciting. We had a poster yesterday, and then today we'll have an oral talk.
Were you just like mobbed?
Oh yeah, there was a lot of people. It's like 3 hours straight of like, you know, like waves of people to like that were we were trying to stick. But
so I've never received the best paper. Do you just find out on the website? Like what?
I just like woke up one day and like checked my email, and then I just saw an email. Oh, you award like been awarded best paper on
it. But maybe you know from the reviews as well, right?
So like, we know from the reviews that we did well, but there's a difference between like doing well in the reviews and getting best paper. So right. That part we didn't actually know.
Yeah. Okay, so I skipped a little bit. Maybe we can go sort of one by one and sort of introduce you know who you are and what you did on the team.
I'm Kevin. I was an undergrad from Princeton, and I just graduated. And yeah, I guess I led the project, like started the project, and then was very happy to collaborate with Ishan and Nicole and Ben also.
Right. And were you in like the same research group? Like context?
So we're all from Princeton.
Yeah. And thanks to Alan for booking you guys.
So this project actually started from like an IW seminar. So like an independent work research seminar that Ben was teaching. And this was like actually like one of my first experiences in like ML research. So it was really valuable to like get that experience. And then Ishan was also in that seminar and working on adjacent things. So we collaborated a lot during that seminar. And then, the project turned out to have some pretty cool results. And then later on, also like the HALT working on sort of similar things also joined in on the project and became like a good collaboration.
Yeah, and I don't know if any of you guys want to chime in on like other elements of coming into like deciding on this problem.
So it's like probably my lab works on deep reinforcement learning, but historically deep meant like two or three or four layers,
not 1,000.
So when Kevin and Sean mentioned they wanted to try really deep networks, I was kind of skeptical it was going to work. I've tried this before; it doesn't work. Other papers have tried this before, and it doesn't going to work. So I was very, very skeptical starting out. I don't know if I conveyed this at the time, but that was my prior going in because...
But do you view your job as like screening or like, hey guys, this is probably isn't going to work. You should try a different idea. You know, like, or should you be encouraging even if it's dumb?
It's selecting bets.
Yeah.
And this was a bet I was willing to make.
What made you willing to make a bet?
It like, seemed relatively low cost in that... We, Michal in particular, had spent the past year developing infrastructure that made it a lot easier to run some of these experiments. And the precedent was deeper networks should do a whole lot better. Like, that's what the deep learning revolution has been over the last decade.
Yeah, I know. Why do we stop making them deeper?
And reinforcement learning was like this one anomaly where we continue to use these really shallow networks. And that's particularly true in the settings that we were looking at, where you're starting from scratch, you're starting from nothing.
Any other perspectives you guys want to chime in with?
I guess maybe I should just go over like an overview of our project.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Yes.
So the way that I kind of view our project is that if you look at the landscape of deep learning, you know, you have NLP, like language, vision, and then RL. And like as Ben kind of alluded to, you know, like in language, in vision, we've sort of converged to these like paradigms of scaling to massive networks, right? Like hundreds of billions of parameters, trillions of parameters. And there's been, you know, a lot gained in deep learning from that, right? And then, but then, it seems like in the third sort of branch of deep learning, in deep RL, that has not yet been the case. Like I was very surprised, like coming into some, like, you know, Ben's class and seminar when I was looking at the networks. Oh, why were you just using like a simple, like two-layer MLP for like these frontier sort of, you know, state-of-the-art RL algorithms? And so I was very curious, like, can we design RL algorithms? Can we sort of put together a recipe for RL that can allow it to scale in potentially, you know, analogous ways that language and vision might scale? And so what we did is that we know that traditional RL, like let's say like value-based RL, doesn't really scale, right? This is pretty clear from the literature. So we tried a different approach to RL called self-supervised RL, where instead of learning like a value function, we're learning representations of states, actions, and future states such that the representations along the same trajectory are pushed together, the representations along different trajectories are pushed apart. And this is just like a different approach to RL that allows us to learn in a self-supervised manner. So there's we can solve task breach goals without any human crafted reward signal. And so we know that self-supervised learning is scalable in these different areas of deep learning. So can self-supervised RL scale in similar ways? When we first tried it, it actually didn't work. Like, we made the networks deeper, the performance like totally degraded. But then we also, I separately was like, there's also some other work like in RL literature, like we tried like residual connections. And then there's a few other architectural components that we had to put into the recipe. And then all of a sudden, like one day, like I ran this experiment and there was like this one environment in which there was like going from like doubling the depth didn't really do anything, but like doubling the depth again with these different components suddenly like skyrocketed performance in this one environment.
Getting this to work was very non-trivial in the sense that like usually when we think about doing hyperparameter optimization, we try changing A, see if it makes it better, try changing B, see whether it makes it better. And if we just made the depth bigger, it makes it worse. We guess add residual connections didn't make it better. And it was really this combination of factors that Kevin and Sean figured out that really made this work.
And as a precursor to that, we also try scaling along different dimensions. So scaling the batch size, scaling the width of the network, so the hidden layers.
And perfect.
Pretty much kind of similar to just scaling depth naively.
Yeah.
And then once we started introducing residual connections, layer norm, these specific architectural choices, that's when we saw these significant jumps in performance, like these critical depths at which performance multiplies by a pretty huge factor. And that's where we really noticed like unlocking some significant performance gains as opposed to scaling just along with, which did yield some performance improvements. But when you look at the number of parameters that your network has as you grow width, it's roughly a quadratic as opposed to something like growing depth. So it's more, in some senses, more parameter efficient, also more sample efficient from the experiments that we conducted.
Nice. In some ways, you're sort of replicating stuff that is seen in the wild, but on a very small model that you can study. Would you say that?
Yeah, so kind of to add to what Kevin said earlier, we saw these huge performance improvements in language models, image generation models, by making them larger, making them deeper, which seems very intuitive.
Yeah.
And so that's why our work, we draw from like foundational research, right? Like residual networks, which employ residual connections to avoid vanishing gradients. And that's something that we show in some of our ablations in our paper, like further down, probably in the appendices, where we did experiments without these residual connections. And so there's sort of borrowing these concepts that have existed in other fields and applying them to this setting with RL and showing that it works.
Before Ben has to go, I'll leave the sort of last word to him. What additional work does this inspire that you want to push on next?
I think there's one thing I'd clarify about the paper, and then I'll directly answer the question.
Yes.
I think the thing I might clarify about the paper is, I think a lot of people reading the title are like, wow, big networks, they're great. I'll take big networks.
And, you solved it now. We can just go.
Yeah, we just take big networks, add them to PPO, add them to SAC, add them to your favorite reinforcement learning algorithm. But I think that's actually not the main conclusion. I think the main conclusion is that using big networks not only requires these architectural tricks, but also, as Kevin mentioned before, it requires using a different objective. This objective doesn't actually use rewards in it. And so there's another word in the title, reinforcement learning, that also might be a little bit of a misnomer, because we aren't directly trying to maximize rewards. Our code doesn't have a line of code saying maximize rewards here. And so is, at the end of the day, this a reinforcement learning method? I don't know. It looks much more similar to the self-supervised methods in other areas of machine learning. And so I think that the method in the work really stands in some sort of interesting intersection of reinforcement learning and self-supervised learning research. And we had this little figure on the bottom left of the poster, which was a screenshot of a slide from Yann LeCun talking about how to build intelligent systems and whether that's going to be done by unsupervised learning or supervised learning and reinforcement learning. And I think what her paper really suggests is that the boundary between these things is really blurry, and maybe the keys to building intelligent systems are going to be leveraging insights from all of them.
Yeah, the layer cake.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for your time. I know you have to go soon.
Unfortunately, I have to run.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. I think that that insight of like blurring things is interesting. I don't know if you like you were talking about sort of like the abstraction layer of representation learning. I don't know if that triggers anything in terms of like the mix between self-supervised and reinforcement learning. Is that something fundamental that you've discovered or that people don't understand when they read the paper?
Yeah, I think the best way that I would explain it is that we know that standard RL is not super scalable. And so like, why can this different approach or different objective RL be scalable? I think it's because we're fundamentally shifting the burden of learning from something like Q learning or like regressing to like TD errors, which we know is quite spurious and noisy and biased, to fundamentally like a classification problem. We're trying to classify whether future state is along the same trajectory or along a different trajectory. And we do this with representation learning, right? And we know that classification, cross-entry loss, and representation learning is scalable in the deep learning literature, right? If we think about language and like some of the objectives there. So in some sense, we're kind of blurring the lines. We're doing reinforcement learning. It's still an actor-critic reinforcement learning algorithm. It's like a goal-conditioned reinforcement algorithm. But the objective, the burden of like learning of solving that RL task shifts to something that's more similar to some objectives that you might see in language and vision that we know have scaled so much. And so I think that's like one of the fundamental insights that we've seen is that it seems like by approaching RL in this different approach, we're able to like get so much more out of, we were able to scale our networks like significantly beyond what was like standard used in RL.
Can I jump in? I will just give a bit more of context about the architecture because we use another objective, the contrastive loss. However, the architecture is quite similar to the previous works of previous papers like Bro or Simba, Simba Fawiel, and Simba Fawiel 2. Simba Fawiel 1, Simba Fawiel 2. So we also tweaked a bit of this architecture. However, it's not that we invented the wheel for the first time. It's the merging between the architecture and the objective that makes the scale really go up and performance follow the scale.
I think that's something that we should probably mine deeper. Do you think, I guess, like what domains, what industry, like you've applied it on multiple different types of networks or data sets. Is there a particular affinity that you think like is kind of low hanging fruit?
Yeah. So actually, if you look at a lot of our tasks, they're particularly sort of like robotics tasks. So this is personally, I'd be very curious about how a work like this could impact like the robotics field. Like my understanding of robotics is that a lot of robotics right now, there's kind of a few different approaches. Like one approach is we want to train the robots using imitation learning. So we try to collect like an insane amount of data. We have a ton of human supervision and we try to scale up this data and we're like learning with imitation learning. Like, but on the other hand, perhaps there's another approach, which is like, for example, like goal conditioned reinforcement learning, where we can actually train robotic agents and train RL agents to solve meaningful tasks with absolutely no human supervision, no demonstration.
And it's much more scalable, yeah.
So this could serve as an alternate approach. And perhaps instead of like scaling data, like scaling manual, like human supervision, which is, you know, not super scalable, if there are ways to sort of make goal conditioned reinforcement learning scalable and like we can just scale the architecture or we can scale
because you're focused on new objectives, yeah,
right, with certain different objectives, I think that could be very exciting and see how that can affect a field like robotics, for example.
Yeah. Double click on just one thing on the efficiency which you were talking about. I would expect the very deep model, the deeper it is, it should be quadratically worse. I'm not familiar with like the pre-existing literature. I'm just like sort of working out intuitions. Mm-hmm. But basically, what are the trade-offs that you've found that I think you might want to warn people about? Because you are the guy who mentioned efficiency, so...
Sure. Yeah, so I was referring to like one of the figures on our poster, also in our paper, where we compare like the number of parameters that models have as we scale along the axis of depth and as we scale along the axis of width.
Yeah.
From our baseline architecture, the most baseline one would be like a width of 256, like the hidden layers have 256 neurons, and then the depth is four layers, four hidden layers. And so the point I was making there is that when you scale along depth, the number of parameters that your model has is going to grow roughly linearly. Whereas with width, you're making your network outputs wider and then the input to the next network is also growing as well. And so the number of parameters your network's then going to have grows approximately quadratically. And so one of the experiments we did was sort of examining as we grow the number of parameters in our model by scaling along these two different choices, which one for the same, like, approximate number of parameters yields a better performance. And the depth curve kind of goes like this. It jumps up pretty fast. That's like present throughout our paper. For width, it grows a little bit more slowly. And so that the kind of takeaway from that is that if you are a bit more resource constrained, scaling along depth might be better because with fewer parameters with a smaller model, a smaller number of total learnable parameters.
Width is expensive.
Width is expensive, exactly. And in general, of course, like more parameters is also going to be more expensive. So that's just like another consideration to think about when using these networks, I suppose.
Yeah. Any other sort of rules of thumbs like that that I can extract. That this is just the most basic one that I could think of.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any others.
Yeah, I guess like to your original question of like the trade-offs, like one of the trade-offs, one of the limitations that we say is like, obviously if you make the networks bigger, it will take longer to run, right? So if you like double the depth, at some level of depth, you it might take like twice as much to like make a forward pass through the network, right? However, this is not, so like within our paper, like for most environments, we are able to like saturate, like get to like almost perfect performance within just, you know, we don't even need to get to like 1,000 layers, like maybe just 64 layers, for example, is sufficient. And in this regime, like the latency of the network is not necessarily actually even not necessarily like a significant bottleneck. Like you can imagine there's a lot of tasks in which, especially in RL, that like collecting data might be the bottleneck, right? And making forward passes through our network may not be the bottleneck. And so in our environment, in our research, we specifically used the JAX GCRL environment, which is a JAX-based GPU accelerated environment. So we can collect like thousands of like environment trajectories like in parallel at the same time, so that we're able to like make
This is built in,
right? This is built in, so that we can collect, you know, like 1,000 trajectories at the same time along all these environments, and so makes sure that like we have enough data to like saturate the learning from.
Wow,
yeah,
that's like work they've called.
Okay. And you, I don't know if you want to expound upon that.
On the JAX GCRL, maybe
and you know, most people are familiar with PyTorch, me less familiar with JAX.
So. With JAX. I think JAX is getting the traction, especially in RL field, because for online reinforcement learning, getting as much data as you can is the most important.
There's got to be a PyTorch equivalent, but anyway. Any tips for other people also exploring this kind of rollout?
So I think I can also recommend, like, for go conditioned RL, I'm recommending JAX GCRL, but there are also like multi-agent JAX implementations and others. So going back to our paper, if you look at the plots, we only see this like huge performance increase when we cross like 50 millions of transitions gap. So I think the data is crucial, like, here.
Yeah. I guess even to build on that, like, I like drawing analogies to like successes in other areas of deep learning. Like, for example, in large language models, the reason why we're able to scale to such large networks is that we found a paradigm in which we can leverage the entire internet scale of data to learn, right? And so data in RL traditionally has been hard to come by. But now with these like GPU accelerated environments, we can collect hundreds of millions of times of the data within just a few hours. And so I think that this serves as like a really good test bed for us to be able to also find ways to scale up like network capacity and get similar kind of gains.
I think I asked
about, are you saying that you have a difference, you would do pre-training differently in LLMs? Like what's the difference objective now? Very simply, the paradigm that you're referencing is next word or next token, right? It's very robust. Yeah. How do you change that?
Oh, I'm not saying that. I want to leverage insights from that to apply to RL.
I feel like you should go the other way.
You think you should go the other way? Yeah. Maybe. I mean, that would be a very interesting research direction too. But actually, yeah, even on that point, like one of the things I was thinking about is that the way that our RL objective works is in some set, it's not exactly next word prediction, but it's kind of like next state prediction, right? You imagine you're at some current state and you're at some current action. And we want to predict whether or not this future state, this certain state, is a future state along the same trajectory or a different trajectory. And so in some sense, we are actually doing some sort of like
implicit world model.
Implicit, like, you know, like in
I don't know if that's a bad word these
or,
days.
Or like in language, you do a cross-site loss to classify the next token, right? And here we're just doing a binary classification of like whether or not some next state is some...
It's a classification.
And so I do see that there are some like sort of parallels here that perhaps we should dig into deeper and see like what is the core of what enables deep learning to scale, and then how can we like leverage that, how we can distill those like insights and then apply those across like all different fields, whether it's language or reinforcement learning.
Did you get my meaning about the world model stuff?
I think I might have heard Professor Eisenbach yesterday talking about this at a poster, and he's explaining to a couple of people that because this is like doing representation learning and trying to learn these meaningful representations for a given state and action, been for a given goal, in some sense, you can think of it almost
learning a model of the environment, learning a model of the world, but without having to do any sort of like next frame prediction or stuff like that. That's a little bit more high dimensional and complex.
Yeah. I would think like the angle that I'm trying to think about and push is instead of learn the next world, they're basically like generate a number of candidate possible worlds and classify them to your point. Which is exactly how I do things. Let's say I'm playing poker and I'm trying to classify what hand you have. Well, there's a range of hands based on what you're doing. And the more information I get, the more I resolve to, I know exactly what hand you have based on what you're showing, you know, or you're bluffing. But you know, that's a different thing. But you know what I mean? Like I feel like that is the ultimate sort of end goal of representation, which is a world. But I don't know if that is too vague compared to the more concrete types of world models that, let's say, the video gen people are doing. And then I guess one other thing, like I'm also exploring, you mentioned like the deep models being slower or more expensive. Yeah, that is a trend in the inference world of making models shallower, right? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this like short catchphrase I was thinking about, like deep teacher, shallow student, would be a good deployment paradigm.
Yeah.
Like you push the frontier capabilities with F, and then you distill
it back.
I feel like this is like a point. Like if you go out to our website, like this is one of the future directions that we list at the very bottom.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Yeah. We would love to see if we could get similar performance. Like we push the, you know, like we do achieve state of the art performance on gold condition RL and JavaScript RL by a significant amount. And so it was very exciting to see the sort of frontier of the ability to train RL agents sort of pushed. And if we can do that in a way that also sort of is just as efficient as a standard, you know, networks, that would be very cool. So, you know, like, is there
able- Yeah, because training doesn't have to be the same thing that you deploy at inference.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
So if there's ways to like distill down to a smaller model or prune the model and maybe not and still retain performance, that's a very interesting research direction that we should build.
Let's talk about other future directions. What else is your personal passions?
Yeah, so currently I'm pursuing direction of stitching in reinforcement learning. So we are trying to generalize reinforcement learning from shorter sub-behaviors so that they are stitched, merged during the test time. And I think this is one of my last papers that I will tackle during the PhD.
Personally, I'm very curious of like, I'm curious about like advancing the frontier as much as possible. So if you actually look at our paper, we focus on scaling depth, but we notice that we see that scaling width actually also improves performance. And we also find that actually by scaling depth, we actually unlock the ability to scale along batch size as well. So this is one of, yeah. Okay,
it's
so
like
I guess
collinear, like, yeah.
Right. So like, okay, I guess for context, like in traditional RL, like value-based RL, scaling batch size is not super effective, but there's also other work in other areas of deep learning that show that scaling batch size is only most effective when there's like a large enough network capacity to take advantage of the scaled batch size. And we actually find that, you know, perhaps, you know, so one hypothesis might be like, perhaps the reason why scaling batch size isn't that effective in traditional RLs, because like we've been using these tiny networks that haven't been able to capture that. And one of our experiments is that, like, because we are enabled successful training of deep network, we actually were able to, this is a great test bed for, you know, like, testing this hypothesis, and we find that indeed, as we scale to the network capacity, we also unlock this different dimension of scaling batch size. And so all that to say is that I'm very curious for someone like with enough compute to like take some of these environments, scale up depth to the maximum capability, also scale along width, also scale along batch size. And let's like basically like in the same way that in language, we're scaling along so many different axes, can we unlock different dimensions of scaling as well? And what capabilities and how far can we push the frontier of training these RL agents from doing that?
Before we pass to Ishan, when you say enough compute, what kind of compute budget did you have? I just want to see what you guys got.
Good question. So we wanted to make sure that this is, we wanted to make it such that like, you know, it's quite accessible. So the nice thing is that all of our experiments, even the 1,000 layer networks, can be run on one single 80 gigabyte H100 GPU.
Mm. So that's those dollars. Yeah.
Right. So everything can be run on one GPU. But in theory, if we had, you know, like a distributed training setup and like can just like blast compute through this and really wanted to push the frontier, it'd be very interesting to see how things go.
Yep. Cool. And I've actively been trying to learn as much as I can about vision language action models, role models at NeurIPS going to a lot of
machine language action models,
vision language
VLAs. Okay.
Curious about applications of representation
robotics.
Learning for these. Yeah, exactly, for robotics. Actively trying to explore more in that area. So just reading a lot of literature, talking to as many people as I can.
Yeah, we just released our episode with Genuine Tuition.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Where, if you know a bit about their history, they started as a gaming clipping company. Yeah. And they basically have a vision language action model, which I saw a preview. It was very impressive. I'm not sure exactly how transferable it is to embodied use cases, but it doesn't have to. Like, screen is fine, you know? Like, yeah, I don't know if you have any takes on...
Yeah, that's an exciting research direction, definitely.
Yeah, I think the concept of actions as something that you are outputting is actually not that popular in industry, right? Only because text has completely dominated the last 3 years, and tool calling, and which is just another form of structured text. I feel like the action research is kind of like, I don't know what needs to happen in order to unlock the next phase in that. I don't know if you've seen anything interesting out here. Shout it out.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool work on like leveraging pre-trained VLMs. And
you freeze it and then you apply it. Yeah,
exactly. And then you have a training on top of that, like some sort of experts to output actions. Also like systems for doing like hierarchical planning, maybe outputting some higher level plan and this is like a larger network that takes a little longer to do inference, and so it outputs its plans with less frequency, like some sort of chunk, and then from there there's like some sort of second system that operates a bit more fast. I think there's quite a bit of interesting research in that direction, so that's what I'm looking forward to.
Cool. Final question. Hardest question you were asked at the postal session, or just favorite encounter, anyone famous that you met?
So I actually haven't gotten a chance to go to the conference that much. I'm actually working full time now, so So far, I actually literally just got my badge like a few moments before my session. So I guess I wouldn't be the best to answer that question.
No. People ask you stuff, right?
I'm my post.
People asking you or meeting you and like, you know, just give a vibe of like what people are saying and
I think it's sort of like a very eye-opening. I think that the general question is that people thought it's a very eye-opening paper because like the objective is quite simple. It's quite elegant. And for us to be able to like, you know, like, I don't want to say like overturn, but like sort of challenge the conventional wisdom that like RL is not super scalable and push it to such limits, like 1,000 layers deep and see continue improve performance. I think the general impression that I've gotten is that, you know, this could be like a really cool, like if we can sort of build along this direction and that like we can really scale along all these different dimensions and push the frontier of the ability for RL. I'm very curious to see how that goes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for dropping by. Congrats on the paper again.
Yeah.
And good luck in your future work.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Thanks.